Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is happening and welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Tuesday, July 3rd. And the Pistons counter the big boogie to the Warriors move with the return of Jose Calderon. This is your boy, Matt Shook, a sports writer here in the Motor City, covering the NBA for the Associated Press and also the Detroit News, a Pistons follower my whole life, and a sports newspaper reporter around the country for over a decade. Glad to be back in Michigan with you all here this summer. Thanks for making us part of your daily routine here on the Locked On Pistons podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about the Jose Calderon deal, making his return, the long-awaited return to the Detroit Pistons, and we're going to skip the rest of the rundown because next season is already over as far as the free agent moves that were made across the league. We're also going to be talking to Tony East of the Locked On Pacers podcast to get the scoop on new Piston Glenn Robinson III, who the Pistons signed on Monday. And I got some Detroit media news to pass along that may not sit well with Locked On Pistons listeners, but we'll be passing along my thoughts on it as well. DeMarcus Cousins, as you probably have heard by now on Monday night, agreed to terms of a one-year deal for about $5 million with the Golden State Warriors. And I don't really want to spend too much time on this. If you listen to this podcast regularly, you definitely already know where I'm at with this. I just don't get it. I was texting with a few of my friends and some of you guys listening to today. I had a buddy of mine talk about this who will remain nameless, who said to me via text, "Hey, if he wants to take less money to go get a ring, then more power to him." Man, I disagree. I couldn't disagree more. Certainly he has the right to do this, to join the two-time NBA defending champions. And I don't want Adam Silver stepping in and doing anything about this, and I don't want rules down the road to prevent this kind of thing from happening. But this is the kind of move that should be taken care of by the public. Publicly shame these guys, boo them, the Warriors, everywhere they go. When they win the finals again next season, shrug, call them frauds. Don't talk about these individual players in a historical context based on these championships they're winning. Can we call them the best team ever, the best era of winning by a single team and stuff like that? Sure, but do it with an eye roll. Do it with an asterisk, all this stuff. I feel like maybe from some of the anger that I'm seeing around the NBA from Twitter tonight, I feel like I'm finally getting vindicated. Some people are coming on the bandwagon with me as haters of the Warriors because the masses, I think they're going to turn on these guys next season and everyone will complain like I did ever since Kevin Durant joined this team for a couple of halfway meaningless rings. And I know that there's a lot of you that still are not on board with this, that respect the fact that Kevin Durant joined the team that it's easier to play with, and maybe like the fact that DeMarcus Cousins is rebuilding his career a little bit while he mends himself from the injury. Won't play until the winter, by the way, maybe February, maybe January, because of the Achilles injury he suffered that ended his last season in New Orleans. But who cares if you're the Warriors anyway? They're just going to cruise through the regular season. Don't expect a 73-win season. They're going to make it as uninteresting as possible for the most part. They'll get up for the big games against LeBron and the Lakers, but not a lot of excitement looking at the playoffs next season once again. And hey, if that's what you guys want, if that's what some of the NBA wants, certainly the ratings will still be up in the playoffs. So it's not like people are abandoning the sport, but join me, root against them. And when they do win, shrug your shoulders and say, no historical amount of significance that I'm witnessing, really, except for a team that has kind of, taken the coward's way out in a lot of ways and combined to themselves to other all-stars to become NBA champions. By the way, the Lakers, putting the team around LeBron, they had KCP, Lance Stephenson, and JaVale McGee join him on Sunday, and now Rajon Rondo. And I like Rajon Rondo. I thought $9 million was too much for him. It's a little bit much on the salary side of it, but I do like Rajon Rondo as a player. Going to be a problem with him and Lance Stephenson as non-shooting options of the perimeter, but think about those personalities. Lance Stephenson, JaVale McGee, Rajon Rondo, KCP joining LeBron James. I had a thought that maybe someone in the Lakers front office said after the LeBron signing, like, man, this is really going to be a circus with LeBron around here, and Magic or Rob Pelinka maybe misheard them and thought, okay, hey, go sign the circus. And that's what they've done. They've signed the circus as he is joining the circus there in LeBron. LeBron's circus is joining the other circus as Lance, Make 'em Dance, JaVale McGee, and now Rajon Rondo joining the party in Lakerland. I'm going to watch. I'm going to enjoy it. Should be fun. Already excited for the NBA season. And we could poo-poo this next deal for the Detroit Pistons as much as we want. Certainly it's not a major one for them as we move on to the Jose Calderon deal. Well, he's going to be in his age 37 season coming up. He's also the third point guard at the moment, getting $2.4 million for one season from the Pistons on Monday. He shot 46.4% on three-pointers last year, but he only shot 96 total for the Cleveland Cavaliers, so it's not a real reliable number that's out there. For context, he shot 31.3% for the Lakers and Atlanta combined the year before that. So, you know, kind of a whatever on that, a horrific defensive player, but one who can competently run an offense and one has been able to do that throughout his career. We'll see how his body holds up in what might be his final season in the league. Pistons fans will remember him from 2012-2013, actually the 2013 portion of that season after he was traded in January from Toronto to Detroit in a three-team deal. He ended up playing 28 games for the Pistons that year, started all of them, and again, competent offensively, very bad defensively, and it's only gotten worse as his age has increased. That was the deal where the Pistons gave up legendary forward Austin Day and, well, an actual legend in Pistons lore in Tayshaun Prince, who wore out his welcome in Auburn Hills back then. The obvious thought is this is it for Dwight Bikes in Detroit, and they'll renounce his rights before they have to make a decision on that by September 1st, whether to give him the guarantee or not. But I am not so sure. I wonder if this is actually possibly the end of Ish Smith in Detroit and that a trade might be coming down. I look at Jose Calderon and Ish Smith. I just think that they're very similar, too similar in many ways. You already had the veteran point guard backup in Ish, and now you're two backup point guards are going to be horrible defensive players. I think they're really non-shooting players in a lot of ways. I know that Calderon knocked down the threes and is probably maybe more of a decent shooter than Ish Smith, who's a below-average shooter. But I just think there's too many redundancies with these guys, offensive players with no defense. And it might be a sign that Ish is gone from the team. We will see as the offseason transpires. Plus, any kind of trade for Ish Smith means the Pistons are back comfortably under the luxury tax line, which they're right at right now, just below it. Like I said, just still not at it, because if they keep Calderon and drop Bikes, like most of you guys are figuring that they're going to do, and certainly they could do. I'm not promising that they're going to trade Ish, or that's not definitely happening or anything like that. Wouldn't surprise me if they don't. But this move would actually save money if you keep Calderon and drop Bikes as it pertains to the tax, comparatively speaking, despite the fact that Calderon is making $1 million more per season than Bikes coming up this year. Since Calderon is getting the veteran minimum of $2.4 million, he only counts as $1.5 million against the caps, against the salary cap, and against the tax line as well. So if you're looking at websites like Early Bird Rights, as we talked to Jeff Siegel yesterday and confused about that, that is why. There is a part of the NBA collective bargaining agreement that encourages teams to sign some of these veterans by having them be charged only the veteran minimum for what a second-year player would make against the cap. So even though he's a 10-plus-year veteran making that veteran minimum of $2.4 million, he's only charged against the Pistons cap and luxury tax line at $1.5 million, which is actually slightly lower than Dwight Bikes, who rounded off was also 1.5, but was actually a couple hundred thousand dollars more. So interesting cap machinations there, that although they're getting a player and paying him more, they're actually saving money if they decide to go Calderon instead of Bikes against the salary cap and the salary tax. Not off of Tom Gores' pocketbook, by the way. He's still paying that full $2.4 million to Jose Calderon. He played 8 minutes a game in the playoffs for the Cavaliers last year and pretty much completely fell off late in the season and out of the rotation for the most part into the postseason. Started 32 games for the Cavs, played 16 minutes a game, probably too much mileage for him in his age 36 season. The Pistons obviously will not be expecting him to play more than like 5 minutes a game. Maybe those 8 minutes a game that he played in the playoffs might be an accurate way of looking at what his contribution to the team would look like, barring injury, of course. And we know the Pistons with Reggie Jackson have had point guard problems with health in the past, but he's Calderon, definitely an insurance policy and probably a better one than they had last year. I made the great Twitter joke on Monday that nobody liked or maybe I got one or two likes on it, but I said that Jose Calderon is Spanish for Jameer Nelson. Now, it doesn't get any better than that, folks. So if you're looking for better Twitter jokes than that, you've got the wrong guy. But in other news for the Pistons, a big one, kind of a sad one for here on Locked On Pistons and with many of the Pistons fans, is was a beloved figure for Detroit here in his second stint in the Motor City. But Anthony Tolliver, officially gone, joins the Minnesota Timberwolves on a one-year deal, another one of his former teams in the league. So congrats to Anthony, a friend of the Locked On Pistons podcast, and good luck to you in Minnesota with the Timberwolves. Maybe our paths will cross again before this whole thing is over in your career, but we will see. So we're going to be talking next to Tony East of Locked On Pacers. This is Locked On Pistons. You're going to be listening to him on Locked On Pistons. He is the host of Locked On Pacers. Going to be talking about Glenn Robinson III, the new Piston, and also about the Doug McDermott signing and the changing landscape of the Central Division. But if your company wants to reach men between the ages of 18 and 44 years old, you should be sponsoring Locked On Pistons. We are listened to by 98% men and 80% between the ages of 18 to 44. So if that demo sounds good to you, this is your spot. Plus, we have reasonable rates. So email me at Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, at yahoo.com to find out more.
Yes, sir!
And now we're being joined by friend of the show, Tony East of Locked On Pacers, the host there, also the site expert for 8 points, 9 seconds. You can find him on Twitter at TEastNBA. And Tony from Pacers Land, thanks for joining us here.
Matt, thanks for having me. Love doing these Locked On crossovers with other teams.
Absolutely. Keep it in the family, as we say.
Yes.
So Glenn Robinson III, obviously Detroit Pistons fans pretty familiar with him already from his work in Ann Arbor with the Michigan Wolverines. But Tony, wanted to get your perspective on how his 3 seasons in Indiana went lately. Let's start with the good. What should Pistons fans be excited about with GR3?
Well, the good is that he's come from Indiana to Michigan before, because he went to high school in Indiana too. So you should know that he's comfortable with that transition. He'll be happy and comfy back home. But on the actual basketball court in the NBA, you can find him being one of the best 3-point shooters in the corner you'll find. And across his 3 seasons in Indiana, he shot 40% his first season from the corner, 60% his second year, and 47% last year. He just buries that shot every time he gets it. When he came back from his injury last year, which I'm sure we'll have to talk about that in the bad momentarily, for probably the first 15 or so games when he was back, his role on offense was very limited, and they just planted him in the corner. You know, he'd cut over there and just stand there the whole possession. He still found a way to be effective because he can knock down that shot so well. He doesn't really try to force anything either. Kind of pretty low turnover guy. Turnover rate last year was 5.3%, which is very, very good. He's a really good off-ball guy, mostly as you can tell by spotting up in the corner. He's a really good cutter. He's just a smart player, so he knows when to cut too, and that's a lot of being good at cutting. And most importantly is that he's got a semblance of being good on D. He's the best Pacers wing guy at staying in front of guys on the perimeter outside of Victor Oladipo. He's got a pretty long wingspan, and he's athletic enough to stay in front of pretty much anybody who's not a superstar. So there's a lot to like, both between being a good, efficient scorer and being a good wing defender.
Now, like you mentioned, the ankle injury suffered in training camp, missed about 58 games to start the season after surgery to repair that. Was the explosiveness still there? This is a guy who won the dunk championship a year ago, last February 2017. Was it still there? And was that maybe the biggest reason that he's not, you know, back in Indiana or maybe back getting a better deal out in the open market?
I think for sure it's why he's not back in Indiana. There were a lot of people thinking that he could even eventually reclaim the starting spot last year over Bojan Bogdanović before he went down with the injury. That's how good he was the season prior to that. But the injury really set that all back. And like I said, he was very limited immediately after his return. But they got him going a little bit for probably the last 10 games he played. I can remember the exact play. I noticed it. They were playing the Warriors. They ran an inbounds play where he curled around a screen, took Kevin Durant off the dribble, took a fadeaway from the elbow, and just drilled it right over him. From that point on, you could see that he had a little more explosiveness. They were trusting him with some more actions, letting him handle the ball a little more. He even had a nice, you know, dunk against the Celtics in their next game after that. He really came alive after that with a little bit more ball handling duties. And it's not like he was playmaking or anything like that, but he, you know, they were letting him do more than just being a spot up guy in the corner. And we saw he could do that before the ankle injury, which is encouraging for you guys mostly. In 2016-17, he started 27 games at shooting guard, actually. And he was excellent in those minutes, fit really well next to Paul George. And that's what I think made him such an appealing guy to take over a starting role. But yeah, he was very limited at first after the injury, but he came alive at the end and was able to get in some playoff minutes too. So I think he's fully recovered from that now.
Anything else that stands out about Glenn Robinson that that fans should know about that we may not, we kind of lost track of him maybe over the past 4 years that maybe we don't know about?
Well, this is always something you never know when you sign a guy on a new team. He's a great dude. I guess Detroit would know that because he went to Michigan, actually. But Glenn Robinson is just a fantastic guy. He's always been so nice to the media, so nice to fans, loves hanging around all the facilities, works his butt off. Just a great dude. And you know, that means a lot. And I think that'll fit in well with what Detroit has going right now. But other than that, you know, remember that he won that dunk contest. You already brought that up, but is that, you know, it's hard to call him sneaky athletic when he's won a dunk contest, but he's way more explosive than you'd think. I believe he hurt his ankle actually dunking in training camp last year. I'm almost positive actually. So those kind of things, I think if he gets his explosiveness back, you'll notice right away that he's way more athletic than you'd think watching, you know, just clips of him from playing. So just keep those things in mind when you see him for the first time.
And you mentioned the move from Indiana to Michigan as a high schooler. He was kind of an unheralded recruit when he was committed to John Beilein at Michigan and then moved up the prospect rankings as his senior year moved on and really turned into a really solid prospect and then even blew that out of the water with the 2 years he had at Michigan, which were showed off a lot. And I think a lot of us that followed Michigan back then thought that he might be the best pro prospect out of that group that included Nick Stauskas, the Big Ten Player of the Year, and Tim Hardaway Jr. and Trey Burke as well. So he's pretty much lived up to that when healthy, you would say, at Indiana.
He might be the best player of that group in the pros now. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. Yeah, Stauskas had a nice run with Brooklyn at the end of last year, and Hardaway has been on and off during his career. But yeah, like you said, but all those guys are kind of, after disappointing starts to their career, all those guys are kind of rising up a little bit right now.
Was Mitch McGarry on that team too?
Yeah, McGarry came in with Robinson and was obviously the all-world recruit coming in. But then he's fallen off since then.
Random tangent, but that Trey Burke against Kansas was still one of my favorite highlight YouTube videos of all time.
I was living in Springfield, Missouri at the time and watching that game with a bunch of Kansas fans, so made it even more special.
Quite the game. You know, there's already some connection to GR3 to Michigan, which will be awesome. And I wonder if that had anything to do with his decision. You know, I saw in Shams Charania's tweet that Robinson was happy with the money, which he's made minimum contracts his entire career up till this point. So I think that's going to be that was a big deal for him to get his first payday. And I think with Detroit, you know, I might be speaking out of place because I'm not as in tune with the team as you, but they're pretty light on the wing. Being able to add a guy like Robinson who can play, you know, two ways on the court and play wing is huge for them.
Yeah, absolutely. Getting the bigger wings that can guard those small forwards and even maybe some smaller power forwards, because they had a lot of glutted shooting guards. But really just Stanley Johnson was the only, you know, quote unquote, small forward that they had on the roster before getting Glenn Robinson. But Indiana, Tony, was a team that was a lot of interest going into them this offseason. One of the only teams that had some cap room, had a lot of decisions to make in terms of some player options and some possible waivings they could have made. I guess that's probably not the right word. Waivers, whatever. But now they make a surprise deal right after midnight, or maybe I guess it was one of those that came in before midnight that they passed along. But Dougie McBuckets, heading to Indiana, 3 years, $22 million. What's the scuttlebutt around Pacers Nation about the reaction to that move?
Yeah, most people right off the cut, like McDermott, but think he's overpaid. Zach Lowe's point was that he got a little bit over the tax pyramid level exception, which is going to be the bidding for a lot of these guys, just because so many teams are capped out. And I agree with him. I think that's kind of how it went down. But I do like the fit for him because he's tall and can shoot really well from the outside. The Pacers bench was starved for three-point shooting last year between Sabonis and Corey Joseph and Lance Stevenson not being excellent shooters. They'll be happy to have that. And I think he matches the play style of their starting small forward, Bojan Bogdanovic, well enough that they don't have to, you know, alter their game plan at all when they make that substitution. And he can play a little four because, like I said, he's 6'8". So I think he fits really well, and I think shooting is something this Pacers team needed. So that will be nice to have, and I think he could fit really well. It's just, you know, you never know about the money until you see him on the court.
Yeah, I followed McDermott's career pretty much throughout, and I saw him play at Creighton a couple of times when he was in college. And things that people, you mentioned him playing a little bit of four, the things that people don't understand about McDermott is he came in as kind of a Missouri Valley Conference crafty power forward type that scored around the basket really well and developed and lost the weight and became the perimeter player and showed the flashes of the shooting throughout his college career and then developed that as he became a pro. So I think that maybe the reputation of being just kind of a shooter is a little bit unfair. And I think that Doug can, as time goes on, maybe show off some of those things that he had early on in his career as well.
I am looking. Yeah, you shot 65% at the rim last year. And I agree with you that, you know, that could be a skill of his, being a little more inside outy. And I think that'll help a lot too. Just having a guy who can maybe create his own shot out of the post is just huge for your second unit. And it'll be fun to watch him and GR3 possibly match up in the division games this year.
Yeah, I want to talk about the division a little bit, because obviously it's not the biggest deal in the world to win the Central Division, you know, compared to playoff seedings and everything like that. And the Pistons didn't have a playoff seed last year, so there was no need to worry about that. But what do you think as you look at the Chicago's and the Milwaukee's and Ersan Ilyasova kind of being along the lines of McDermott is a little bit surprising to me anyways, that you would use a lot of that cap, that whatever cap room or mid-level exceptions that you have available right away on guys like McDermott and Ilyasova. What do you think as you look at the landscape, and especially throw Cleveland into that mix too, of a team that I believe they lost a free agent yesterday as well? What do you think about the division right now?
Yeah, you got to say that the Cavs seem like the worst team in the division now after that departure. Depends what happens with Kevin Love, really. But they could end up being near the bottom with Chicago. You know, both of those teams don't look too good. But I think really, you know, Milwaukee's got Giannis and they just added Ilyasova. But, you know, their ceiling is kind of limited. They have a new coach. We'll see what happens with them. And Detroit really underachieved last year with only 39 wins. But now they have a summer with all their new guys. Like, I think between Milwaukee, Indiana, and Detroit, you could have quite the battle for the division crown next year.
Yeah, and I think when we talked early on in the season, I maybe it was when we were talking or around the time that I mentioned that Indiana could be that playoff team that falls off going into the second half of last season. And they certainly proved that that wasn't the case, and then gave LeBron a seven-game series there. I mean, the reaction among Pacers fans do you feel like that they're just scratching the surface with this group, and that the expectations are to take it another step or two steps further going into next season?
I think the question is, you know, do they try to get another star? Do they bank more on Miles Turner? Because, you know, you always hear with team building in the NBA to win, you need stars to win in the playoffs. And they got one, you know, in Oladipo. They'll have him for a while. So the question now is, you know, is this their ceiling? They have this one star and the role players around him, or can they make another splash and move to get another guy and take it to the next level? You know, obviously Doug McDermott's not the guy you add to take your team up 5 to 10 wins, but, you know, he does help the team. So I think the front office thinks it's going to be a long game and they're going to count on some internal development to get that other star, maybe in Miles Turner, and take him to the next level. But it seems like they expect their ceiling to be a bit off in the distance.
Well, Tony East, one of our favorite guests here on Locked On Pistons and the host of Locked On Pacers. Find him on Twitter at TEastNBA, also the site expert at 8 Points, 9 Seconds. Thanks, bud, for taking the time.
Thanks for having me, man. I appreciate it.
Also, some late breaking news as I record this early on Tuesday morning, to let you a little behind the curtain, just so you know, from early Tuesday morning, Yahoo is reporting Avery Bradley, the former Piston, is staying with the Clippers, signing for $25 million over 2 years. Seems like a lot given the injuries that he had last season and throughout his career, but a quality player who was definitely in line for a much bigger payday before his struggles last season with the Pistons, and then obviously the groin injury that ended his season early for the Los Angeles Clippers. But a player the Pistons wouldn't have been able to afford to retain this offseason, and after obviously the trade for Blake Griffin and the enormous contract that he has, there was no chance for it to happen after that too. So good luck to him in Clipperland in Los Angeles. We will see the scoreboard of that Blake Griffin trade. It'll be a fun one to look back on in 2 or 3 years, obviously depending on the Pistons side for the health of Blake Griffin. Some Detroit media news that I wanted to pass along. Mike Valeni back on a multi-year extension with 97.1 The Ticket, the radio host there. If you're a local person, you know Mike Valeni. If you're not, you may not. But I've never met Mike with any of my media travels. I've always found him to be entertaining, definitely a compelling show, known for his negativity, known for his rants, largely about Michigan State and about the Lions in the past as well. Been very negative about the Detroit Pistons, but you know, and a lot of the people listening to the Locked On Pistons podcast are more your positive Pistons fans. I feel the love for the team on Twitter a little bit when I hear from you guys. But Mike Valeni, certainly a guy who tends toward the negative, but I think it's a reality check. We got to deal with that as Pistons followers, that's the situation. We're talking about a team that's been struggling for a decade. The apathy has crept in with most of the fan base, and I know a lot of the diehards might be listening to this podcast here, but Mike Valeni, kind of the bad boy of Detroit radio, but certainly number one in the market for a long time, and wanted to pass along that he is here to stay. So if you're one of those people who rips on 97.1 the ticket and wants him to be off the air, you will not be getting your wish anytime soon. So let me know what you think about that. And Valeni on the radio as well. Give us a follow on Twitter at @Matt_Schoch, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore after that. Also, the Locked On Pistons Twitter account. Give us a like on Facebook at Locked On Pistons-MattSchuk. And give us a rating and review on iTunes. We'll be back. Plan is to be back on Wednesday with another podcast before the holiday weekend. We'll look ahead to Summer League, which actually begins on Friday, so get ready for that. But that's the plan for the rest of the week. Again, this is your host, Matt Schoch, for Locked On Pistons, and thanks for listening, everyone.